You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we say what we mean and we mean what we say. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, and I'm now broadcasting from the brand new Midside headquarters in Orlando, Florida. But don't worry, nothing has changed. The podcasts are still running around right now causing trouble because I just got on the air. So, of course, you know, they need attention. Same show, same content, just a little bit different, a little bit shorter because some discussions in the off season with my big move and everything. Daniel's life, you know, his son keeps getting older. He has plans, I believe, to write a book, he said. We're going to try and keep the episodes a little bit shorter. We're going to cut the third segment completely, and we're going to do one less news story because, let's be serious, the farce is getting more densely packed anyway, so three stories should be enough. Three trailers should be enough. But before we continue, I just want to note that last episode, for those of you who listen to every episode, thank you for that. I said in the season finale, my goal was to move to Florida by the middle of the year, by summer. Well, I'm here already, so that shows you the importance of knowing your values, following through with them, and doing what you got to do, living in reality. There you just heard one of the podcasts, I believe. So, told you, nothing's changed. As far as you're concerned, nothing's changed. Also joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
The more things stay the same, the more things change. Or something. I think I messed that up.
I think you said it backwards.
Yeah, on purpose. Hello. It's been a while. Probably our longest winter break ever.
Yeah, well, when you get a job offer and they're like, can you move across the country in 2 weeks? You kind of have to take an extra break.
It's good. Congrats. Welcome back to the objectively correct time zone.
Yes.
Glad to have you here.
Oh, man.
I will say, though, it's harder to watch sports over here. And what
harder?
I mean, that, well, in some ways.
So 10 a.m. football?
Yeah, that sucks. But you know what also sucks? 7 p.m. football or 8 p.m. football or 8 p.m. basketball.
8:30 p.m. football for Sunday night football.
Right. The Celtics went to double overtime against the Clippers earlier this week. And
are those
hockey
teams?
I didn't get to bed until like 11:15. It's basketball.
Oh, okay. Poor baby.
Not complaining. I'm explaining the difference.
Speaking of poor baby, you mentioned my son getting older. He turned 18 months old over the midside winter break.
So he can vote in the next election, right?
Pretty close, at least for a Democrat, yeah. And he has expanded his vocabulary immensely, and he can answer almost any question I ask him now, you know, within range, not like advanced physics questions, which I wouldn't even be able to ask anyway. But the point
I was going to say, were you going to ask him a metaphysics question?
He's starting to develop his own views of the world and his concepts of what things are and what people are, and the way he describes things is very funny. And he, this morning, summed up my wife and I in a way that was poignant and a little introspective for me. So he loves Old MacDonald, had a farm, but he likes to throw me ones like moon, like Old MacDonald had a moon, and laugh at what I'm going to say for what the moon says, or water, or whatever, in addition to animals. So I just asked him today, well, if Mama was going to be on the farm, what does Mama say? And he said, ha, ha, ha. I was like, oh, that's funny. Picked up on Fiza's laugh. Oh, what does Dada say? No, no. Like, how dare you?
So you're the bad cop, huh?
Apparently I'm the bad cop, which makes me sad. But someone has to be in this house. And someone has to be in this culture. That's what the midside's here for. No, no.
Well, that's a great transition. Also joining us this trip
Shut
from
up,
our nation's capital, William Green. No, I messed it up. I messed it up. No. I've been gone so long, and I'm so annoyed at the cat right now that I messed it up. Identifying as a from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege. William Green.
Hello,
sorry about that,
hello, man. First, you don't pay me for a break, and then you mess up my intro. It's in my contract.
As I've said many times on the show, I wasn't giving anybody any money from the Patreon until I got to Florida because there's no state income tax, and I was not giving California any cut of that money. So we will negotiate this year much of the Patreon everyone gets.
So it's so happy to be, I'm so happy to be back. Break was amazing. We had like 3 weeks off my regular job, so of course, like a overworked person that I am, I spent every day in the store and completed a bunch of training and generally had a good time. The store's going really well. Santa brought me a very nice gift, though. I think some of you saw it on Twitter already. I finally pulled the trigger on my new car. So the Audi is still in the driveway, the 10-year-old Audi, but now it has a brother, a nice red Model 3 Tesla. And just so I can make sure no one mistakes this for some sort of love of environmentalism, I want you guys to click on the picture I posted in the Discord and take a close look at the license plate frame I had custom made to
replace
the Tesla.
Do a countdown, William.
Okay,
and we'll click on it.
3, 2, 1.
I already saw this on Twitter.
Well, I know Daniel didn't see it. What do you think, Daniel? What does
it say? Oh, nice.
Read it for the audience.
It says, coal-powered. Moralcaseforfossilfuels.com.
Yeah, that's a long URL to try to fit on the bottom, but I managed to get it going. So I'll post
okay,
this.
That was my main comment. Okay, I like the coal-powered, but I was like, that's a lot down there. And people are going to read that, and they're going to be like, what does that mean?
You should have bought them a URL just for redirect.
Yeah, I should have.
The mid-side. I like the coal-powered.
Yeah, well, I was definitely not going to be able to fit the mid-side on there. But other things going on.
Wait. I have a question first.
Yeah.
Aren't people going to look at that and be like, this is an electric vehicle. How is it coal-powered?
Yeah. Well, how is it fart-powered, too? I mean, wind-powered.
I loved the when Alex Epstein was explaining that to someone the first time, and they said he was explaining how it was coal powered, and they said no, you plug it into your house, and then he had to go down that rabbit hole of, well, where does your electricity from your house come from? And they had never thought of it before. And that was a great moment of watching their face just be stunned, like, oh, I guess it does have to come from somewhere. It's not just my house generating this power.
I wish my house generated power. I'd sell it back to the grid.
So what if the person was like, I power my house every day by riding the bicycle.
You'd have to ride it to the bike. Pretty fast and for quite a while to run your blender.
So anyway. I too have been keeping up with my New Year's resolutions, which is going to the climbing gym 2 times a week. So that's been a lot of fun. But the real thing that I started that I've been putting off for years, ever since I moved to the Dale's Lawn area, is there's a kickball league. And I finally joined the kickball league. There's only one problem with this kickball league. It's the varsity gay league.
Oh.
Well, it is co-ed. It's multi-ed. Spectrum ed?
Not just co.
Sorry, that was oppressive of me.
So, you guys know that I hate gay people. To be clear, I hate queer, right? Like, I hate the whole politically gay. And thankfully, there's not a lot of that. But there's definitely a lot of camp. And organizing whether the team should have a viewing party for RuPaul's Drag Race, and I was like, anyone want to go see the Super Bowl? So there is an interesting mix of cultures. It's not all that way, but I just thought it was that you guys would get a kick out of one person was trying to organize a RuPaul Drag Race, and I was the one trying to organize a viewing party for the Super Bowl.
A kick, William? It's kickball.
Yeah.
Okay. I've been a dad for too long.
Uh-huh.
I'm just really glad I left California, hearing stories like that.
I know. Who wants to watch RuPaul's Drag Race? Certainly not me.
In Florida, they're just inviting you to meth parties, so.
Not around here. I'm in the safe area by Disney.
Daniel, if we don't make a segment called Florida Man for this season, we're doing a terrible job as producers.
I think we could do it differently, though, and have it like Florida, comma, man, exclamation point or something.
Yeah.
And have a different spin on it. But yeah.
Why don't you guys, listeners, jump in on Discord. Help us develop this Florida, comma, man concept. I think we'll have a new short segment to spread out through
Florida, man,
this season.
About how awesome Florida is?
Maybe.
How many furniture stores have you driven by?
You're really going to continue the California propaganda campaign of making everyone believe that Florida is terrible.
Well, I think what we want is new insights from the mind of the Midside into what makes Florida good or bad, and not the propaganda campaign from California about what makes Florida bad.
What makes Florida good? It's not California.
That should be their state motto.
California. Everything you love about California, just slightly more humid and less expensive. I've been checking the humidity, right? And I don't want to keep going
too
long.
Also hurricanes.
Right. But I'm in Central Florida where the hurricanes don't hit as bad. And earthquakes are scarier. But I don't want to like go on and on. But I've been checking to see what the humidity here versus the humidity where I lived was. And there's really not that much of a difference. I don't know why they get on about it. I mean, I understand, yes, it's going to be worse in the summer, but I'm not going to judge the entire year versus 2 months.
Just be careful, Justin. We're going to start a segment called He Doth Protest Too Much. But
exactly.
We'll give it to you for this episode because it's new and it's exciting.
I for one, am looking forward to finding all the coronavirus-free zones in Florida when I visit.
You know,
it's the novel coronavirus. Thank you.
Oh,
I was in Pizza Press here, and an Asian couple walked in, and the woman had the mask on, and I was like, "God damn it, even Florida!" Although,
well,
to be
Justin,
fair,
you've got
a higher chance. Go ahead.
You got to feel some sort of delicious irony to have a virus named after a beer as a straight edge person.
Yeah, I think it's hilarious. And I had a friend who had the last name in California, the last name Corona. And I was like, why'd you make everyone sick, man? All right. But when I came across the country, I drove. But for you, if you're going to go across the country, you probably want to fly. So let's talk about what's going on with the airlines in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad.
Midsiders, now that Justin has landed in the tax-free Florida, it's more important than ever that you join our Patreon campaign, patreon.com/themidside, where you can give us a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content, and we're going to keep the content flowing here in 2020. Lots of airline talk this week, specifically as it relates to seats. No, it wasn't a Jerry Seinfeld stand-up bit. It was, in fact, a video that went viral when a woman in the second-to-last row had the audacity to recline her seat into a man who is in the back row. And for any of you who have never flown before, the seat in the back row does not recline because there is a wall. So this man decided he wanted to take justice, vengeance, retribution into his own hands, and decided to repeatedly punch the woman's seat who reclined into him, And at least according to this woman in the video, the airline flight attendant was less than helpful. In fact, asked the woman to decline her seat and then proceeded to give the punching man rum, which I'm sure didn't escalate things at all because alcohol is known for its magical diffusion powers of situations.
Was the man Captain Jack Sparrow?
Why is the rum gone? It was not. Delta CEO weighed in this week saying that he doesn't personally recline his seats on flights. More on that in a moment. But he does think that for those who do, it's proper to ask first. He says, quote, "The proper thing to do is if you're going to recline into somebody, you ask if it's okay." But he did reiterate that he thinks people have the right to decline their seat. This became a huge Twitter conversation this week as people weighed in on both sides. The core arguments being, hey, if the seat reclines, then you're allowed to recline it. And the rebuttal being, no, anyone who reclines their seat on a plane is literally Hitler. So, Justin, why don't you settle this debate for us once and for all?
I'm going to go the pragmatic route here, Daniel. How are you possibly going to ask the person behind you if you can recline your seat? I can't even talk to the person next to me. They can't hear me on a plane. You have to, like, yell at them. You'd be like, hey, where's your final destination? And they're like, what? Where are you going? Well, who are
also,
you?
Also, I would avoid saying final destination on a flight. Just because of the putting movie? That out there. Yes.
Okay, the movie name comes from the fact that stewardesses used to say over the intercom, we're happy to service you to...
Wait, what?
Blah, 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 or wherever your final destination is. Yes, they used to say that,
planes are you taking? Hooters Air?
I wish they discontinued that.
They sure did.
With the casino, too. The casino's gone as well. Anyway, yeah, I mean, how? Like, I could turn around and say, hey, can I recline my seat? And if I yell it, like, eight people are going to say yes or no, and then they're not going to know who exactly you were talking to. And you don't have any room to turn around and see who's behind you. It's just not feasible.
Yeah, I'd have to ask permission to turn around to the people sitting on whichever direction I was turning because my knees would hit them, my elbows would hit them. I'm usually stuck in a middle seat on a cross-country flight. I think that's just my luck. And, you know, the whole etiquette around who gets the armrest is another fascinating thing. We need a gentleman's guide.
Wait, there's etiquette for that?
Yes.
Usually I just fight people.
The middle
people.
Person should...
The middle seat is supposed to get both armrests, right?
Oh. Yeah. I never get it.
Oh.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, a couple things here. One is...
Wait. What I was going to finish up in saying is, I thought because of that pragmatic issue, it was always understood you could just recline your seat. The only problem I ever have is when people recline their seat before they say you can recline your seat, because I'm not expecting it. Otherwise, you can do it at any point, and I expect it. But when they haven't given you permission yet and you recline it, I'm just like, where did that come from? But otherwise, I
also
don't
have
get
the
upset.
Problem with the slamming the of it back because that I fear my damage to my laptop or, you know, knocking a glass over when you slam it back at the speed of sound.
Yeah. And that usually happens before they tell you you can. That's been my experience. And then the final thing is this guy. He's the one with the problem. I mean, doesn't punching the seat hurt him more than anyone else? So now he's pissed off that he can't recline his seat. He has a reclined seat in his lap, and his hand hurts. Good job, dude. Good job.
There are multiple angles to this story. First of which, the Delta CEO, I'm sure, is perfectly fine reclining his seat on his private jet that he flies around the country. So let's not worry about what he does with his seat. He's not flying coach on Delta Airlines. Two is, it has... what do people get... What do you get out of reclining your seat? Let me just ask you personally. When I have reclined my seat, the 1/1000th of a degree or whatever it is that you get to decline it, recline it, I don't get anything out of it. There's no point to it for me. It doesn't help me sleep better. It's not a more comfortable seating position. If anything, it's weirder. which is hard for these airline seats, but it makes it weirder to sit. And then two, I know I'm doing more damage to the person behind me than I'm getting value out of reclining. So I never do it anymore, ever, under any circumstance, even if the person in front of me reclines. And then third, and then you can respond to any of this, third is stop filming people. I get that this guy was punching your seat. It's horrible. Deal with it like a goddamn adult and either confront him or confront the airline person or something, but don't film it and put it online. I hate this era of social media. End.
So two things. One, it does help me. Believe it or not, it does help me. I'm the kind of person who I'm very sensitive to sleeping positions and such. So a couple extra inches can be very helpful.
That's what she said.
Okay, thank you, William. I'm sure we'll get something out of you for that.
I've never slept on a plane. Never. I've had a red eye and did not sleep one iota.
I intentionally, when I fly across the country, try to take a red eye and not sleep, because then when I reach my destination, by the end of the day, I'm so tired that I just automatically am in the new time zone. That's how you beat jet lag, ladies and gentlemen. You're welcome.
Torture?
Basically, yes. Because by the end of the day, you're like, oh my God, I'm so tired at Epcot. Why am I doing this to myself? Anyway, with the filming thing, I think the problem is, Daniel, is twofold. One, nobody can feel vindicated unless they have somebody else's attention or blessing. Yes. There has to be an external source telling them, oh, you know, that's bad. And two, part of that comes from nobody has any shame anymore. So you could turn around and confront that guy and be like, dude, what the fuck's your problem? And he'd be like, what's the fuck your problem? And back in the day, when you would confront someone and they did something wrong, they would show an element of shame for it. So I think both those problems add up to the filming problem.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
Is that taking, taking the aspect of shame and putting it online? Because I was at the movie theater watching Sonic, by the way, which I hopefully will mention
shame
during our review section.
Oh,
but there were children, and Daniel, please do not do this with your children. I'm assuming you'll have more. So you know those things when you're in line for popcorn, the little tapes that come out, the little stanchions. The children were pulling on them. Like hanging from them, they're just the cloth ones, right? Like they don't hold any weight. Jiggling them, knocking them over. I was literally holding one up at one point. Can anyone guess why? Because I know how much they cost.
Guess why they were?
Because I have to buy them occasionally, replace them when people knock them over in the store, and I'm just like, oh my god, this is like $800, and these parents are just letting these kids like destroy these poor stanchions. And if I had said anything to the parents, I would have been the
comedian,
bad guy for sure.
I was watching comedian Tom Papa last night, who I'd never heard of, but has a pretty good stand-up special on Netflix. And he was lamenting. He was basically saying, do you remember, maybe you don't remember, but there was a time in America when kids weren't in charge. Like adults actually ran things, and it was a glorious time. And that will be how our household is run, by the way. We're not... We try not to let the child run our lives. It's difficult, admittedly.
Yeah, and,
but,
and I'm not advocating to do like what my parents would have done, which would have been smack me. But there's certainly we can live in a world where you're still kind and firm with children and they don't destroy $800 stanchions at the movie theater.
Or, and when they grow up, punch the back of people's seats when someone does something
exactly.
They don't like.
I mean, you could just tell them, if you keep doing that, we're not going to see the movie. And then if they keep doing it, you leave the movie theater. Don't have to
Correct.
Hit them.
Correct. Correct. This is a Jordan Peterson thing, right? Which is like one of the most important elements of your children's lives will be whether or not other people like them. And that's not a thing where they should get their self-worth. That's a self-esteem issue. But it is going to be somewhat related to their success in life, which will be somewhat dependent on other people. And if they're hated because they're little jackasses, then that will be very difficult for them later on. Case in point, man punching seat, who I'm sure is a delight at parties and in the workplace.
The question I have is, I couldn't really tell from watching the video, was this person overserved before he got on the flight? Because maybe that extra rum was to put him out. If he was
true, maybe the stewardess.
I mean,
was,
that's surely
oh my God,
what
I said
they
stewardess.
Were trying
the
to do.
The flight attendant was doing the right thing here.
That's surely what they were trying to do. They were surely because they have no other recourse. What are they going to do? You're stuck on a flight with the belligerent.
I have
person?
An engineering the solution for this problem: ejector seats. Just think about it. I think we could make this work.
That will also work for our next story. Michael Bloomberg, former New York City mayor who is running for president, is considering Hillary Clinton as his running mate. This is the point at which you hit the ejector seat.
Breaking news, Daniel is also running for president on the Democratic ticket.
Not yet. Although, funny, dumb side note, which is what I do on the show here, the executive director of the Libertarian Party asked to meet with me. Great guy, actually. He's new to the position, but I didn't know why he initially asked to meet with me. So we had coffee and sat down, and I said, I don't know why you called for this meeting, but if it's to ask me to run for president as a Libertarian, I completely accept, and I'm ready to serve this country. So, but sadly, that was not it. It was more professional in nature, but nonetheless, campaign coming soon. So is Michael Bloomberg with her? Mike Bloomberg could team up with Hillary Clinton to try to take down President Trump in November by making her his running mate. Bloomberg's internal polling found the combo would be a formidable force. Good use of words there. Bloomberg's communication director did not deny the rumor. He said, "We are focused on the primary and the debate, not the VP speculation." But minutes after Matt Drudge of the Drudge Report broke the news, Bloomberg himself posted a coy message about working with female colleagues. He said, quote, "I would not be where I am today without the talented women around
Giggity.
Me. I'm dependent on their leadership, their advice, and their contributions," he tweeted. A Bloomberg campaign insider told the Post that the two have long been simpatico, going back to the days when she represented New York in the U.S. Senate and he was Gotham's mayor. Clinton initially said that she probably wouldn't accept, but that she wouldn't rule it out. In fact, when she was talking to talk show host Ellen DeGeneres recently, she said, "I never say never because I believe in serving my country." So, Justin, is Bloomberg Clinton the ticket to beat the Donald?
No.
All right. That's all, folks. Have a great weekend.
It is shocking Hillary is somehow involved in the election cycle this year. No one would have ever seen this coming. This is like the Chris Rock, Samuel L. Jackson reboot of Saw. They're giving it a different name, but it's still the 10th movie in this horror franchise that we're just going, can this just end already? Can this please just end? We do not need another Hillary Clinton tries to be the first female something. Hillary Clinton tries to be in charge of this country. We don't need this anymore. Does anyone really believe she's going to turn it down? No. She's going to try and do it. This is what's going to happen. They've already called their shot, ladies and gentlemen. This is what's going to happen. You know why? This is the people who control this country. This is the elite. This is how Trump got elected. I'm not defending Trump. I'm not a fan of Trump. But this is the wave he rose. He rode. He saw everybody being like, man, I'm sick of the Clintons. I'm sick of the Bushes. And he portrayed himself as the outsider to Washington. And that's how he got elected. And that's the even more farcical thing about this story, Daniel and William. They sat there and they said that polling showed they would be a formidable team. Did you only poll extreme Democrats? Because I'm pretty sure half the country is going to fucking hate this.
I mean, it's a good question because I think even the progressive side of the Democratic Party is going, please God, no, who want Bernie, you know, to burn it all to the ground. So, William.
Say what you want about National Socialism, man, but at least it's an ethos.
Say what you will about National Socialism. Okay.
That's a line from The Big Lebowski, just to be clear. And I found it very
Lebowski
appropriate
too,
for the way you were
soon.
Just describing the Democrats. Is it?
Yeah. I'm surprised it wasn't on Trailer Takedown.
Lebowski-ing. Oh, we've got far better trailers on Trailer Takedown. You just hold on. William, can you predict the headlines for December if this were to happen? Because I can. President-elect Bloomberg found dead in apparent suicide.
I was thinking the same thing. I was like, if we get a vice president Hillary Clinton, there will be a sad and mysterious heart attack about a week into the summer, the first summer. And we'll be celebrating a Clinton presidency.
Come on, that's what's going on already. That's the play. She's got something on him forcing him to make her his VP. Do we really believe he wants her as the VP?
No. I wouldn't want her as anything, as my grandmother. Could we start the hashtag trending, hashtag Bloomberg didn't kill himself? We're going to need it. I mean, he has to get the nomination first, right? Do you think there's any chance of that,
William? I don't think so. You know, he's literally doing what the Democrats accuse Trump of doing, which is trying to buy an election, right? Like, he doesn't have a lot of groundswell of support. There was a story...
Wait. A Democrat is doing what the Democrats accuse the Republican of doing?
No way. He's, like, buying memes from, like, meme farms on Instagram and things like this that, like, I guess in some way, I don't want to be the whole, money in politics is bad thing, right? I'm only pointing this out because I'm looking at it through their own lens, which is not very helpful. But in this case, it's a little bit helpful because I don't understand how he survives through the primary season with the super woke leftists who, you know, they're just all in for Bernie. And this whole buying an election and trying to meme his way in, it's not going to work. The Trump playbook is not going to work for Bloomberg. And then bringing Hillary in, that's just another establishment candidate. And, you know, people who felt the burn aren't going to vote for Hillary.
Oh, my goodness. This election. All of American politics is so weird. But if you want to watch something hilariously uncomfortable, you should check out Bloomberg's Blacks for Bloomberg rally, which is what it was called, where he is the sole white guy standing in a sea of black people behind him, all of whom are uncomfortably applauding him because they've very clearly been paid to be there. And it is a Ben Stiller movie if I've ever seen one.
Did he do it during Black History Month?
Did he make a Jesus pose?
Since it is Black History Month, yes, he did do it during Black History Month, as it was, I think, this week or last week.
Wow, that's super tone deaf.
But wow, are people uncomfortable on that stage? Since he is the stop and frisk mayor, for anyone who remembers that, where he had a policy where cops could just stop anyone on a New York City street and frisk them for a weapon, regardless of a search warrant, and they targeted black people.
No.
So I don't see him getting much support from that demographic. So I think he's doomed. But speaking of doomed, our culture is apparently doomed, not because of Trump, not because of social justice, but because of South Park. Yes, writer Dana Schwartz started a online debate this week after tweeting that it seems impossible to overstate the cultural damage done by South Park, the TV show found on Comedy Central for years and years and years. The journalist and author said, quote, "Smugness is not the same as intelligence. Provocation isn't the same as bravery. The lesser of two evils aren't the same thing," before clarifying, "To be clear, I don't blame the show itself as much as I do the generation of boys who internalized it into their personalities, which maybe isn't the show's fault." Nonetheless, she sparked a debate online that went back and forth to defend and decry South Park. And some people were claiming that Trey Parker and Matt Stone's satirical cartoon is the product of libertarian millionaires with nothing but cynicism to offer the world, of course, ignoring the
fact that Matt and Trey were born libertarian millionaires.
They just conveniently ignored the fact that the show began when they were broke.
When they were bored, the doctor just literally handed them one of those giant sweepstakes checks, and they're like, "Congratulations, guys! You're going to be libertarian millionaires."
And
I was going to say, you were the 100th million libertarian to be born. Congratulations, you're now millionaires. As if they weren't starving students at UC Boulder when they created the first one out of construction paper.
Wow.
Yeah. And the article goes on to say things like, for instance, that South Park has been on the wrong side of history at times, not least of which in regards with Al Gore and climate change. An episode the writers apologized for in 2008, apparently.
That is the worst episodes they've done. The apologizing for the Man Bear Pig episodes are the worst episodes they've done.
So why don't we just dig right into it, Justin? Has South Park been the destroyer of worlds for our culture?
This is another example of what I call gaslighting from the left. This is where they are saying something that is their biggest threat remaining is what is causing the problems when they're the ones who are causing the problems. South Park is the antidote. South Park is not the poison. Look at what they've done in recent seasons with all of the Safe Space episodes. Remember they did that, the whole song with In My Safe Space with the Steven Seagal character and everything? And then the PC Principal character and the PC Babies character where PC Principal and his wife, Strong Woman, have babies. And then whenever anything offends them, people have to, we have to be careful. We're going to make the PC Babies cry. Like, it's the antidote. And they want you to believe it's not the antidote because they need to get rid of it because it's one of the few things that's been Teflon so far. But if they go after it and they get rid of it, they've made major inroads. Because, yeah, South Park has been a positive effect. They've correctly identified one cultural ramification of South Park, one cultural effect of South Park, and is that things like this show exist. Things like people like me exist. Look, I grew up on Eminem and South Park. Like, this is how you get someone like me. Where do you think Justin Rants come from? Right? It's Eminem and South Park and a little bit of my dad making me listen to Rush Limbaugh. Like, you put those two together, and you
end up
with
a Venn diagram.
Yeah, it's me in the middle of it. I mean, you heard all my rants about the Flakegate and stuff, and I was ranting on the Film Junkies stream on Friday night about this fucking asshole in the Snyder Cut movement. Like, unless we have these things, I don't grow up in this way, and that's why they want to get rid of them. Anyone who watches South Park and thinks it's purely cynical isn't understanding it. And I go back to what they did with Snyder movies, where they sit there and they go, Man of Steel is this way. And then I read that and I go watch the movie and I see a different movie and back and forth. And it's the same thing now. South Park is the opposite of cynicism. You know who's cynical? Family Guy. Parody is cynical. Parody is cynical. Satire is not cynical. Satire can only be based upon values that exist. And they're saying, look at the absurdity of the culture going against real values. Satire by its nature can't be cynical. It provides an answer.
Deep. Getting into cynicism in satire and parody. William, perhaps it's that it's what Justin said. Or perhaps it's that South Park is counterculture, no matter what that culture is. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think the whole smugness thing really points that out, right? It is appropriate that that's the one that triggers this Dana Schwartz blue check mark, right? Is that smugness is not the same as intelligence. I agree with that statement. I think, though, that what they were parodying was smugness, not intelligence, right? Like, the whole idea of the way that you communicate with other people, if you have knowledge that someone else doesn't have, you don't approach it with the way that they demonstrated in the episode, right? That was the whole point of the episode, was that people were circle jerking their supposed superior knowledge, and that's exactly what the blue check marks do on Twitter, right? They're always better than everyone. They always have the right opinion. they're always arguing, or not even arguing, they're always posturing when other opinions come out rather than engaging with them. And, you know, this is a great story to start 2020 with. One, it makes my check mark of someone tweets and rewrite a news story about it. So there's that. and then second, just the rampant sexism. I mean, you emphasize it when you read it. Do you want to read that part again? Oh, okay.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Makes me sick.
So I don't blame the show itself as much as I do the generation of boys who internalized it into their personalities.
Yeah.
Real quick, someone want to look up the...
Wait, so the one masculine influence on boys?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. Like, if I had... I named Eminem, right? And I named South Park. And we'll also throw Tom Brady in there, right? And Zack Snyder's more later in life. But without those influences, where am I getting masculinity growing up? Explain that to me.
I wanted to, you to rant about this, Justin. Imagine yourself growing up today. Now, I think there's a pessimistic view and an optimistic view. The pessimistic view is what you just said. Here's the optimistic view. You realize how many 12, 13, 14-year-old boys are listening to podcasts and YouTube. They're watching Bill Burr. They're watching... they're listening to Adam Carolla. They're listening to all these things that are available to them now. I'm actually a little more optimistic, right? People aren't watching television, right? They aren't on Twitter. Now, there's a lot of bad influences there too, but there's a tremendous opportunity. You know, you mentioned Rush Limbaugh, which is a great point. There was no other voices, other than the mainstream voices, when I was growing up, it was scandalous to listen to Rush Limbaugh when I was in high school, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, for me, oddly, that was Ann Coulter. I wasn't even a traditional conservative in high school, but just the fact that reading her was something that was not allowed, like it was forbidden, attracted me to her. In that regard, and she was somehow far more masculine than most things in the culture at the time, so that was weird, but same point.
I didn't read Ann Coulter until college when I found out she went to Cornell, and she shared a similar perspective on the leftists in that area of Ithaca, so I found her that way. But
no,
I think
one,
William...
I think, sorry, there's a side note here. No one will be surprised that this woman, Dana Schwartz, is the author of a book titled The White Man's Guide to White Male Writers of the Western Canon.
Okay. All right.
Sorry. I found that to be very on brand for her.
Isn't Western a dog whistle for white people anyway?
Yeah, I mean, she's clearly a social justice person.
But William, more to your point, I mean, this is going to sound crazy to people out there that I'm going to say something like this, but what do you think the value of a franchise like The Fast and the Furious is? Why do you think it's making all of this money? Name a more masculine franchise out there. Cars, action, hot women. Yeah, sure, it's got diversity, but it doesn't ever like lean into the diversity and the social justice aspect. It's just like, okay, here's an Italian guy, here's a Hispanic guy, here's a Hispanic woman, here's some black people, here's some Asian people. It's not like they do it to, like, make a point. And then who's in it? It's Vin Diesel, it's The Rock, it's Jason Statham, now the new movie is John Cena. That's why these movies are as successful as they are, where people aren't getting their masculinity from Star Wars. I had heard that one of the reasons Lucas is pissed at, and maybe we talked about this, I don't remember, but Lucas is pissed at Disney, is he said that you guys have all your princesses, so I'm going to sell this to you so you have your masculine franchise. And then what did they do? They just made it another Disney princess. That's all they did. Rey is the Star Wars Disney princess. So they did exactly what he didn't want, because there are no masculine franchises out there anymore.
And they neutered Han Solo. Yeah, all good points, and there's not enough time to talk about how terrible Star Wars is now, so we might as well leave that for another time. But I think the masculinity point is fascinating, and the fact that South Park was, in many ways, a father figure to so many libertarian, conservative, or just even
anti-establishment
kids. Yeah, growing up is a testament to its greatness and its longevity, and should no matter what you think of it, it really was insanely inspirational for an entire generation of people.
Yeah, and speaking of lack of masculine entertainment or entertainment needing father figures, let's talk about that in The Hopeful Romantic with Jam Out. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. I need a rerun to better cast the next series of events in the air timeline lapse. My made for TV type was written off in the last season when I wasn't focused on. As always, if you want to join in the conversation during the week or during the break, as some people did, you can join our Discord channel. Go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link, and there will be a join Discord link within the episode link. This week, I saw Birds of Prey, the Harley Quinn movie. I saw this for one main reason, and it was out of curiosity more than anything. I saw this major debate going on whether it was a social justice movie or not and was super anti-man. And I will say this, it is not super anti-man in the masculinity sense. Basically, everyone in this movie is a piece of shit. It's a dystopian sort of quasi-naturalistic approach to a comic book movie. Not as extreme as Joker, but everyone in it is terrible. And Harley Quinn is an anti-hero, as we know, so that's why they took this approach. Although Deadpool's an anti-hero, and they took a different approach. And basically everyone in Gotham is a piece of shit, and it's her trying to survive now that she's broken up with the Joker, and everyone's trying to kill her. So how does she move into her new life? That's what the point is. And it's basically a breakup movie for Harley Quinn, for the female anti-heroes, female supervillains, all that kind of stuff. I would describe it as a cross between Sucker Punch, Deadpool, and The Purge, which is really weird to say. But there was a scene where a bunch of villains wearing masks are hunting her and the Birds of Prey and trying to kill them. It was very much like The Purge. And the aesthetic's kind of more like The Purge. Look, I kind of feel the same way about this movie that I do about Shazam. This movie's not bad. It's not great. It's like a solid C+, B-. I enjoyed watching it. I would never watch it again, but I enjoyed watching it, and I would never dissuade you from watching it. If you're like, yeah, I'm going to pop in the Harley Quinn movie, okay. I'm not going to think negatively for you or of you or anything for it. But it really, it's not life-affirming, so if you're into that kind of thing, you're not going to enjoy it. And it's really sort of disintegrated. And what I mean by that is, I told you it's that breakup movie, but it doesn't have like a thematic core, which is what the important thing is about her. I think it strives for it and it tries to. And I think the director is trying to do everything she can. I think she shows a level of talent and a level of ability, but I think she can grow even more. And she's good. She's not bad. She's good. But she also obviously is trying to work within things that already exist. I mean, the action scenes, the most jarring thing for me is the action scenes are very influenced by Zack Snyder. A lot of the slow-mo use, the speed ramping, which was very interesting to me. Harley Quinn even does the Wonder Woman slow motion sweep at one point, if you know what I mean. That iconic thing she does in her movie and in Justice League. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was very strange when she did that. So she also did something similar to Rey, Daniel, where she was on roller skates.
Yeah.
Yes.
She was a character nobody wanted?
Well, I mean, that is kind of my problem. I thought she was better in Suicide Squad. I thought they could have served her better. But anyway. Oh, and while we're on that sort of kick talking about the characters, anyone who's saying these characters are like desexualized intentionally, I thought that there was more sexuality given to the character of Black Canary than any of the characters in Sucker Punch were given. So I don't see how they were desexualized. Anyway, no, she's on roller skates, hanging onto a car. and she's on the front of the car looking at the driver who's trying to shoot her, and she slow motion does a backflip onto the top of the car, just like Rey did that backflip over the, what was it, the TIE fighter or whatever? What did she do a backflip over?
Kylo Ren's modified
his street TIE rod
interceptor. Okay.
So again, we see the Fast and the Furious influence, right? So it's, there's also interesting things to say about gender in this. And what I mean by that is, where is the line between what a masculine and feminine action movie is? It's very, yeah. It's, I don't think I'm qualified enough to speak on that yet right now, because we're finally getting our first examples of that. You know, when we look back on like the Fifth Element, that's sort of like the first female action star. And of course, she transitioned that into the Resident Evil franchises. And we've had other stuff since. Like, what was that? The movie, like, Violet or whatever, starring Charlize Theron? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Come on, the first female action movie I remember watching was Alien.
Alien. Yeah, sorry. As I said that, I was like, somebody called me out on it. Thank you. Thank you for calling me out. I appreciate that. So, yeah, I mean, we have horror, which has the history of female protagonists, and that transitioned into James Cameron, right? And James Cameron has had female leads in his action movies for a while. Then we had hugely iconic The Fifth Element, and then we've had other movies since. You know, we even had the rhythm section recently with Blake Lively. I think that movie came and went without much fanfare. Right, exactly. So I think there's a discussion to be had here. I don't think that I have enough knowledge yet to talk
really
about it.
Really, because I want to ask you a question
trace over the coming year.
So... okay. One of the things that...
About Birds of Prey
about this topic? In the movie. It integrates with the movie. So one of the things... Okay. I actually was on a date last night watching Sonic, but we actually talked about Birds of Prey because that was one of the two movies we were considering going to. And since you were watching Birds of Prey, I decided I better watch Sonic for the show. But the thing I was worried about watching Birds of Prey is part of a pattern that I've been worried about. So I'm going to use Firefly characters because we all know and love them. You know, Zoe and River were good in a fight, but they weren't acting like men. Now, River more so at the end, right? She's got basically a superpower, right? She's taking on monsters and all this other stuff, but that's the you know, the climax of the whole story arc. But in today's action movies, you have these 110-pound women just pummeling on these poor stuntmen, you know, and every punch they land sends people flying across the room, and every punch that comes in their direction they parry or dodge. That really throws me off. And I don't know why. I mean, it's not that I want fight scenes to be naturalistic, but when there's no acknowledgement of this, like when you have a 250-pound man throwing a punch at you, they would take me out, right? And I'm a 190-pound person. So, Justin, do you think this pattern is going to change? Are we just forever now going to have these skinny, unmuscled women? And even sometimes men, but the trend right now is female action stars, right? That are just pummeling these poor stuntmen, and that's just going to be all the fight scenes from now on?
Well, I think they're going to do that for a while to see if it sells or not, and if it doesn't sell, they'll change it. But I do think it's also how it's done within the story. Like you said, naturalism versus romanticism. Wonder Woman, you accept it because she's part god. She's basically similar to Hercules, so you accept it. Whereas in this movie, it's interesting you say that. I had that sense. And what I mean by that, when I was watching Suicide Squad and Harley Quinn was part of the team, I didn't question her abilities or anything, but at the beginning of this movie, when it was just her by herself and they were doing this whole thing of like, can she survive without the Joker? The Joker's been protecting her. They actually undermined their whole point because I was doubting that she was able to take care of herself. I was like, wait, she doesn't even have any superpowers. She's just super smart and crazy. And I was like, wait, how is that going to work? Now, the argument could be that that was part of the point of the movie. But then it's exactly what you just said. In the scene I described as the Purge, her and the other women get together. Her, Black Canary, Huntress, and the female cop get together. And there are all these men in mask. And one guy specifically, they had him shirtless and he was super built. And they were all beating the crap out of all of them. And I did have the thought you said, William, because they didn't use any weapons or anything. It was all hand to hand. And they beat them all. And I did have that thought. I go, how is this even possible with the amount of men
and
that are involved?
I think because of this sort of naturalistic take and the social justice take on female action heroes, they've painted themselves in an awkward box. They can't have the woman take a punch and take damage for two reasons. One, that's abusing women. Two, if again, the physics of the situation would completely knock you out of the story, right? Just like if a 240-pound man landed a punch on me, I'm out, right? And we're talking an even bigger difference here with some of these characters. And it doesn't make any sense. It just completely knocks you out of the story.
Oh, I agree. And there's a professional wrestling organization called Impact, previously called TNA. And they had this big guy named Brian Cage, like this huge guy who looks like he's taking steroids. He was the champion. He lost to this other guy who used weapons and everything to beat him. And then that guy lost to a woman. And now their world champion is a woman. And you know what? I won't watch it anymore because it's just not realistic. Like I understand we know wrestling is fake. We know storytelling is fake. But art is supposed to be a selective recreation of reality. There has to be elements of realism in there. As I said, if you want to explain it in the case of Wonder Woman, I mean, your example of the men is true too. The Flash. Let's look at The Flash, okay? Let's look at Grant Gustin. Let's look at, Ezra Miller. Do we believe those men would survive in fights with Batman and Superman fighting alongside these parademons and the villains if it not for their superpowers?
Yeah, not at all.
No, not at all. But you explain it by saying they have superpowers. Spider-Man is the perfect example. Peter Parker. Isn't Tom Holland like my size or smaller?
I think so.
Would we believe he would survive without being bit by the radioactive spider? No. So even with men, we have to have that explanation. But now we're going with these female action heroes who, yeah, don't even have superpowers. At least the Fifth Element, Lilu Dallas, it was supposed to be like, she's the ultimate being, right? She's the supreme being, whatever
that
meant.
She was still vulnerable, right? We can't have these vulnerable moments. She was still vulnerable.
Right, and that's what made that movie work, yeah. And what makes it
River,
so tremendous
in Serenity,
is that
River is vulnerable,
even though,
right?
Yeah. Do you want to say anything about the Sonic movie?
I do. I actually think this is a Netflix and chill kind of movie. It's, you know, I go in with low expectations because it's a video game movie. It's actually pretty good. It's definitely a kid's movie, and Sonic is annoying, but that's also his character, is to be annoying. But it's a buddy comedy, and it's a very, very sort of pursue your happiness, right? And there's this whole element of the bucket list that has some very mixed but positive themes. So I definitely recommend it. There's minor spoilers.
There's walkers in the barn and Lori's pregnant.
I think they're trying for a franchise here. There might be a sequel. So I think, you know, give it a little love. It's actually not bad. And you got to support these video game movies when they're not bad.
Two questions for you. One, is the setup of the sequel, does it have anything to do with Tails or Knuckles or anything?
That's a major spoiler, but yes.
Okay. And two, how does using Jim Carrey for Dr. Robotnik work? Because my major hesitance about this movie from the beginning has been Dr. Robotnik is like this fat guy and Jim Carrey's like this skinny manic guy. How does it work? Does it work, or does it change Sonic completely?
It works because you see this a very self-absorbed transformation, and because of how, you know, he's comically evil, okay, because it is a kid's movie, but by the end, he has transformed, and no, he's not fat. He looks very much like Robotnik at the end. And I love how they call him Eggman throughout. Okay, Sonic calls him Eggman throughout.
Well, because that's what people called him, right, who played the game? Yeah. Okay. Well, interesting. I'll have to see that now. I'll make some time for it. Thank you for the review, William. Let's move on to Trailer Takedown. As always, the trailers are posted on the website the Saturday before the episode comes out. If you want to watch them, you can go to midside.com/podcast, click on Trailer Takedown Preview, watch them before we talk about them, watch them after we talk about them, or you can intersplice them. You watch a trailer, we talk about it. You watch a trailer, we talk about it.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Tuscaloosa is a romantic comedy which halfway through the trailer transitions into a social justice movie. I just, like, first of all, I find all the trailers on comingsoon.net/trailers, so I try to find the most recent trailers that came out, and so I clicked on this because I figured we could rip on it, and then I noticed that, did you see there were only like 300 views for this trailer or something? How did it even get on comingsoon.net/shows? They had to pay to get it on there, I'm assuming, and it's not working for them. No one's watching it. But this is just a perfect example of the game Hollywood and the media run, where they make it seem like the rest of this country that aren't them are this backwards, terrible places. This is just now everyone who sees this, or if this movie gets popular, they're just going to associate Tuscaloosa with everything going on in this trailer, whether it's true or not. It's just very jarring the way this is done. It's like the romantic comedy looked fine. It looked like a typical romantic comedy. And then all of a sudden it becomes about, like, oh, we're going to fight racism in the Deep South in Alabama, blah, blah, blah. And then Reginald Barkley's there. And you're like, what is going on? This is what happened to Barkley? Really? Or is this another hollow program for Barkley? I don't know. This is
tackle.
Daniel?
First half of this trailer, as you said, had enough in it to be a movie. It was Southern guy with sort of no plan, sort of growing up in the 60s. So you already have the sort of postmodern era versus the old school Deep South traditional era. Falls in love with a girl who turns out to be crazy, like from the insane asylum or something like that. That's a movie. And then, as you said, literally halfway through, a light switch is flicked, and it becomes a movie about the civil rights movement. That's another movie. That's a completely different movie. I don't need two movies in my movie. I need one movie in my movie. Tackle.
Tackle.
Daniel, do you think somebody presented this script to the Hollywood executives, and they're like, this is really good, but it needs more racism in it?
This is good, but it doesn't look woke enough. How can we look more woke? Let's add another movie to this movie.
I honestly think that may have happened.
Hey, I heard you liked movies, so I put a movie in your movie.
Yeah, it's so funny that this is the first trailer after we just talked about Sonic. It's basically the opposite of the Sonic theme, which is that small towns are special, right? And here we have the complete opposite, right? Like, just like you were pointing out, oh, well, we should consider everything in flyover country as questionable at best. I'm going to tackle.
Tackle.
Second trailer.
To Your Last Death is an animated movie in the style of Archer with a bunch of good voices. I mean, Ray Weiss is in there. Morena Baccarin from Firefly and Deadpool is in there. And in it, this woman's family is horrifically killed, and then somebody sends her back in time with the knowledge of it to try and prevent it. I don't understand this style of animation. I don't understand how this is a movie and not a TV series. There's something about this seems very low budget and hokey to me. Even though there's a lot that I should like, it seems very genre. The actors are very genre. The premise is very genre. It involves time travel. There's a lot of it I should like, but it just seems so terribly made. Maybe Daniel, the animation person, can speak on this. But for me, this is just like tackle.
Tackle.
To say this is in the style of Archer is to basically, it's as if someone looked at Archer and said, I can do that for 1/100th of the budget. And so they took like still frames of Archer, then they made characters and they put them on popsicle sticks and they moved those popsicle sticks in front of a camera. Because that is essentially what the animation is like here. They dropped, I don't know, and if animation is 30 frames a second, they dropped, I don't know, 27 of those frames. It is garbage looking animation, and the story, it looks not that much better. I don't need to see people die over and over again. Not fun or interesting. Tackle.
Tackle.
Thank you.
William?
Yeah, I the animation threw me off too. I actually enjoy episodes of Archer and find that animation to be stylized. This has to be, I'm questioning myself even saying this, there has to be an attempt at doing something stylized, but it just looks so wrong. And I don't know what's wrong about it, but I couldn't even pay attention or even visually process what the visual story was trying to tell me, other than thinking this is ugly and gross. So I have no idea what this story is about, other than killing people in time travel. Is it a horror movie? Question mark? I don't know. Tackle.
Tackle? Final trailer.
The Iron Mask is maybe related to the Man in the Iron Mask. You want to talk about something that looks cheaply made and it looks like two different movies. I don't understand this trailer at all. At first, it's like, we're going to do a weird medieval style fantasy thing. Oh, but wait, this is really just an excuse to have Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jackie Chan fight. We're going to put them in bad costumes. Then it like cuts and there's like all this exposition. I'm like, okay, this is decent. And then it comes back to Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jackie Chan. And Arnold Schwarzenegger is like, careful with that mask. And he's like, Jackie Chan's like, that's not a mask. That's an Instant Pot. I'm just like, what is going on? This is what I don't understand. How does this get made? How do any of these movies get made? Am I the only one who thought this looked absolutely cheap? Like they put no effort into it?
Well, yes, but I think it purposely looks cheap, actually.
Okay, well, you can say that. I'm still tackling this.
Tackle!
I'm not angry about it. I'm just confused.
You're angry about everything.
That's fair.
Although maybe less angry because of Florida. But this looks purposely cheap and sort of like in the genre of those late 80s kung fu movies where there was like, I forget even the name of it, but maybe Big Trouble in Little China. Was that one of them? Where like there was kung fu, but it involved some magic and some mythos. And this is sort of like an alternative history movie. Which is why no one has to explain why Arnold Schwarzenegger, with his accent, is working in the Tower of London. But nonetheless, even for those that type of genre of movie of over the top, like The Great Wall, wasn't that the one with Matt Damon, which is sort of about like aliens and the Great Wall? It looks bad even for those genres, primarily because it's all over the place. The acting is abysmal. Sorry, Jackie Chan and Arnold Schwarzenegger talking to each other. It's just a giant, I don't know what's being said moment. There are no guns. So
tackle.
Why does he get the happy tackle?
I think this movie was written for the Chinese audience, so I don't think it's for us. I think you talking about it being like Great Wall is exactly correct, and this isn't made for us, and it's you could tell from the marketing, there's no... It's got a dragon. It's got magic. It's got famous actors, but not necessarily A-list actors currently. I don't think this movie is for us, and it doesn't look very good, so I'm going to tackle.
Tackle!
I think all of that is fair, and the shot of the Great Wall is beautiful, and the dragon looks awesome. But I like magic and dragons and B-list actors fighting. You can make that movie for me.
Yeah, but there's not a billion of you.
There's not a billion of them anymore either. They got the coronavirus.
FYI, my son is trying to get into the room where I'm doing the podcast now. So at any moment, an 18-month-old could bust in because we've gone over the allotted time for today.
All right, what did we learn this trip, William?
Let's see. I learned that if you're transporting your pet dragon on Delta, make sure you ask permission first to the people sitting behind you.
Daniel?
I learned that Bloomberg is trying to guarantee his loss in this election by picking Hillary Clinton. And because if he did win, he would still lose his life. Justin?
I learned that you can't keep an 18-month-old out of a room for more than an hour. And I learned quite a bit about the way female action heroes are portrayed, so that's something to continue to think about going forward.
Well, we hope you learned something here on your first trip into the Midside in 2020. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you'll keep joining us even in our new show format. Go to themidside.com/podcast for all the past podcasts, and also themidside.com/store for your Midside merch. Subscribe on iTunes. No, it's not called that anymore. My God, I'm old. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Google Play to get these episodes delivered to you the moment that they are published. Leave a 5-star review there because we're worth it. Liberty.me syndicates us. We still appreciate them for doing that. Thank you to our libertarian friends. Patreon.com/themidside. Give a couple bucks. But most importantly, especially in 2020, tell a friend about the show. We need more friends of yours listening to the show, especially with the new and improved mood of Justin coming from Florida.
I just need more friends.
We need some folks.
Really, let's be serious.
He needs some social validation. So until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin M. Lesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the
farce. Have a day, okay?
Don't forget to bring a towel or you'll get all wet. That was a pretty decent Mr. Mackey, William.
Looks completely at the last second. I was like, oh no, I didn't write a half a day.
Show prep. We don't do it.